Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by John Cross of the Daily Mirror and Miguel Delaney of The Independent. The cream is rising to the top. Bayern and Borussia Dortmund, Real Madrid and, unforgettably, Barcelona. Can Man City live with them? More to the point, will they get the chance? Can they protect a two-goal lead in Monaco? Now, John, you'll be there. Do you fancy them?
I fancy City to get through, but I do think it'll be very, very close. I mean, Guardiola said immediately after the first game, didn't he, that we've got to go there and score because neither team can defend and neither team will be confident of keeping a clean sheet. I was at the game Etihad in the first one, and it was one of the best Champions League games
I've seen in a while. Jumpers for goalposts.
Absolutely fabulous. It was. I mean, also, if Falcao makes it 3-1, you're thinking surely the tie's dead, but then he has the penalty saved. And it's just astonishing. It's a topsy-turvy, crazy game, incredible attacking threat, incredible play, I thought, by Monaco, completely threatened to overwhelm City at times. But it just energised. You know, I would have said it was the best Champions League game I've seen for years, and then it gets completely overtaken by obviously the amazing events in the Nou Camp last week. But I just think it re-energised for me the Champions League a little bit. It reminded me of just how special this competition is. And we're still at the last 16 stage. I think this year's competition is shaping up brilliantly.
You're at the Camp Nou.
Yeah.
Give us an indication of the atmosphere within that ground. I'd never seen anything like it.
Listen, I've been to that ground before, and it's actually, I think it's often very subdued until obviously they score, or else there's, what you hear the most sound for is a referee's decision, and then you hear all the whistles and that. But usually it's kind of, there's almost an element of kind of waiting to be entertained. But this was completely different. It was like the crowd were so part of the event. I mean, you saw it after the game with the kind of the way the players responded. But there was a proper, I mean, I suppose I don't want to be too parochial about it, but it was like an English ground or an Italian ground, say, on a Champions League night. There was just that kind of, that real energy to it. And I think there was an expectation about it. Because, I mean, at the press conference the day before, I mean, Luis Enrique has obviously had all this criticism and all that, and he's leaving at the end of the season. But the way he spoke about that match in his press, he's not just saying this, you know, to create, or just because he has to. He seems to actually believe, and it kind of made everyone else believe. And I think it made the actual everyone around the club, and obviously the players believe as well. But right through the game, it was just, you know, it was such electricity around the place.
Because it brings everything into a really tight perspective, doesn't it? You know, this is the Premier competition. You're getting the best teams now coming to the fore. If you look at City, John, Pep Guardiola's made great pains to say, if we don't win any trophies this season, it's a failure. Do you think they will go without actually winning anything?
I think they could do. I think there's no doubt about it in my mind that Guardiola was brought in to almost take the final step in City in their development in their own minds of the world super club, if you like, really. And that's to put them on the Champions League stage. And I think the problem that sort of Guardiola almost has is obviously you're comparing it against last season, reaching the semi-finals. And Guardiola, even before the Monaco game, was saying that basically you've got to be patient here. We're still a club in its infancy. Look at the record of the club in the Champions League. We've not done very much. He's really trying to downplay expectation. I get that. I understand that. He's actually trying to sort of make it easier for himself. But I think there's an element there that actually he genuinely believes that. I think he's gone in there and perhaps been surprised, in my view, that he hasn't actually had more to work with. I think you are beginning to see the Guardiola philosophy take shape, particularly going forward, but I think he lacks so much in terms of defensive stability in midfield. Obviously, the fullbacks in particular, the goalkeeper has been a nightmare for him. I think there's so much more work to be done in terms of City and Guardiola. But, and I think obviously the title, in my opinion, is far too far away. But I think it's going to be difficult for him. I can't really realistically see them winning the European Cup. I think the FA Cup is probably, arguably, their best opportunity for silverware, and I'm not sure that will be big enough for City.
Mm, yeah, we can see that. Say that about probably most of the last four. Yeah. What about City in terms of, you know, look? Let's look at the positives. Sane has really introduced himself in the last, especially in the last sort of month or so, hasn't he? Was he the sort of player you saw coming through?
Yeah, completely. I mean, I suppose this is one thing that's been notable about City in the past 2 months, really, more so, that this kind of younger crop of players, I mean, because some of the talk, even earlier in the season, was how, despite Guardiola coming in, they're still dependent on these key figures who are kind of coming past. I mean, even the fact that he brought back Yaya Toure. But now, with the way De Bruyne's come on, with the way Sterling has developed, with the way Sané has suddenly exploded, I mean, Sané is almost like a new signing in that sense, because the player we have now is completely different from the one we had in August. I think he's the one maybe to most benefited from how Guardiola works with him. I think John touched on it there. I mean, I think what I heard as well from City was basically that Guardiola, he was a little bit frustrated that some of the players weren't able to kind of understand what he wanted to do with them in the way kind of the Bayern players were, the Barcelona players were. So there was kind of it was going to require that, not just that understanding or education that he had to give them, but also maybe more players more suited to him. But I think we are beginning to see that now. I mean, sometimes when they click, okay, maybe not so much in the Stoke game, you know, like, which had the misfortune obviously to be put against the Barca match as well. But I think they have come on in the past 2 months, and I think if they're on form, they'll be difficult for any side in the Champions League to live with, even Barcelona, as we saw from the group stage. But you would still think they're a little bit short of the top three, although I think the top three are more vulnerable, like Real, Barca, Bayern, they're more vulnerable at any point in the last half decade or so. But in saying that, that's created, I think, what has actually been one of the best last 16 stages so far for years. I mean, if you think of the amount of storylines, actually, even these ties that we've come kind of used to, a little bit bored by, like Bayern, Arsenal, like PSG, City, and they've created two of the biggest storylines of the season.
Mm. Let's play City bingo for a bit, John. How many players, Monaco players, will end up at the Etihad? You've got about four or five to choose
from. Or Old Trafford as well.
I do. I mean, I just think Monaco are rich pickings, aren't they? I mean, I do think they've slightly evolved as a football club, but I mean, there's so wonderful, you know, talent. I mean, for me, I think Mbappe is clearly the most exciting young talent,
Scored again at the weekend.
Absolutely.
That over Bordeaux.
I mean, the way that he kind of has got such power, and the way that he can run from deeper positions in bombing beyond. I mean, you saw that goal. I mean, I know it was horrendous defending in the first game, but when the ball goes through the middle and then he's run through, I mean, he's just, no one can catch him and no one can actually stop him because of his power and pace. I mean, the Thierry Henry comparisons are obvious and notable, but they're clear, aren't they? Because he can, I think, ultimately, will he move inside from playing out wide and wide of attack, if you like? He looks so adaptable. He can play through the middle. He will score goals. He frightens centre-halves to death. And he's just got absolutely everything. Their creativity through midfield. I mean, obviously, they're lacking defenders, but what they make up for. And I love the rebirth. I mean, I know he's not going to come back again, but Falcao has just been amazing. And I hope, obviously, that he plays and is a full part of it. Because I felt even at... We didn't see anything of him at Chelsea, but even there were odd games and glimpses I felt at Man United. I know it sounds crazy, but some of his movement, he didn't score the goals to obviously justify that sort of little bit of promise that he was coming back from his injury. He's still a special, special player. And what he actually gives them is that kind of focal point and almost the leadership to actually play off him. And the encouragement. He's a great leader, I think, in a way.
Do you see any other Monaco players ending up in the Premier League?
Well, Silva's obviously the big one as well. Although you'd almost want to take him and Mbappe as a package with the way they link up so often. Well, I think they're interesting in that sense, Monaco. I think they're probably... they've successfully done maybe what a few Premier League clubs have tried to do, and kind of in an era where there's so much money, they've kind of gone not the opposite direction, but trying to be so much clever about using the money. I mean, obviously they had that massive transformation in 2013 when they brought in Falcao, brought in James, realised that didn't really work, and now kind of looked basically to be kind of box cleverer than anyone else in Europe and get the best young players quicker than anyone while still being competitive. So, I mean, I think this actually could be one of those teams that the Premier League looks at for the next few years as to how they're doing it.
Mm. Let's look at the other tie, Tuesday night. Will we see the good old days, i.e. last season, back again at Leicester?
Oh, yeah. I just think it was ridiculous. I was at the Leicester-Liverpool game, and having been to see previous Leicester games in the recent past before that, it was just like flicking a switch. I mean, I do find it somewhat embarrassing that basically the players have been able to do that. And I understand the sort of kind of misgivings and, you know, the complaints. And sometimes it's not ever as simple as that. But I think the way the Leicester players have kind of had almost stopped playing, in my view, for Ranieri. There's a difference between basically the players and no longer responding to a manager and a manager perhaps losing his edge. And the difference between that and there's a difference between the players actually not giving anything on the pitch. I thought they let themselves down, they let the club down, the fans down, because they didn't show a passion that you needed. And I think you can all see a desire, I think, now back in their play, which was sadly lacking for the last few months of this season. I think that atmosphere will be intimidating. I mean, Sevilla themselves have a wonderful stadium, brilliant theatre, and it's a great place to go. It's one of the great cities and places that I've been to in sort of my European experience. But I think that Leicester, when it ratchets it up, the contrast between Sevilla's away and home form is really noticeable. Leicester, against all the odds, are one goal away from the quarterfinals. And if I think you've got to say they've got a great chance
and
of doing that.
The thing about that first leg, and they were absolutely battered. I mean, that should have been 5 or 6, really. But now they come away with a result that actually, it looks even better. Also, Sevilla, there's been a few signs lately that they're beginning to run a little bit of steam. I think the way Sampaoli plays, it's almost like Bielsa and Pochettino, and there can be a danger that because of all the energy they put in, they run out of it towards the end of the season. But the other side to this tie, actually, not to get ahead of ourselves, there's been two similar cases of English teams in Europe who have changed manager and gone for kind of a caretaker figure. That was 1982, Villa, Tony Barton, and Di Matteo, February 2012. not to say that right now is the last 16 and they need to get it back in the second leg that they're going to go and do it, but I suppose just maybe the different circumstances just suddenly create a different vibe about the team. And a cup competition kind of takes on a life of its own in that sense. And you wonder, even the fact that they should have been absolutely destroyed in that first leg, whether they have that kind of cup belief about them. But hang on, this competition actually is running well, going well for us.
Yeah, but Sevilla, okay, they've had two draws. Second one on the weekend, 1-1 against Leganes, which, you know, basically they're preoccupied with relegation. So that was a heck of a result for them. So there is a chance that the momentum is stopping at Seville, but if you look at the talent in that squad and you look at the frailties in that Leicester defence, a bit like the Man City game, you're looking at that and thinking there's bound to be goals here on both sides.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the difference perhaps in 2012 was as great as it was, and I remember a few managers obviously suffered sort of kind of heartbreaking defeats in Champions League on more than a few occasions, looking at it jealously and saying it is a cup competition. Yeah. It became almost the FA Cup in Europe, and it was bizarre, was that there was still a proven quality running through that Chelsea team from kind of pick it whoever you want. Cech and goal, obviously the hero of the final. Drogba up front. I mean, what a way to say goodbye. It's the best farewell from a club ever. Obviously, the midfield packed with talent, and Torres even scores that amazing goal in the Nou Camp, doesn't it? Everything came together. And that's my point about Leicester. While it's an amazing fairy tale, I do slightly fancy them in this game simply because it's the margin of a goal, because of the away goal. I'm not sure whether they've got enough quality actually deep-seated within the squad to kind of go further, because if they were up against a real big gun, I just think they'd get overwhelmed in a similar way that Arsenal did with Bayern Munich, to be honest.
Sampaoli was very dismissive of him after the first leg as well. Like, it was actually, it's rare to hear a manager, usually they're so much more diplomatic, but he was kind of, scathing with their quality, what they tried to do. Now, again, there's a possibility they could maybe catch Sevilla a little unaware, given that maybe Sevilla won't be prepared for the extent of change that we've seen in Leicester, although Sampaoli is very studious himself. But you would think, given the pace that Sevilla play and how slow a lot of that Leicester team is behind, obviously they're going to main counter-attackers in that sense, that they should have maybe a bit too much quickness for them.
You invoke the legends of Barton and Bobby Di Matteo. Craig Shakespeare, give me your take on him. He's been given the job till the end of the season. Is he a stopgap or is he something more?
I suppose it depends how the season goes. I think for Leicester as a club, I think they even in the last month or so, they still want, since Ranieri's gone, they still wanted a kind of bigger name. So you'd have to imagine to have any chance, it could be like a Di Matteo situation, but to have any chance of actually getting the job long term, you know, Shakespeare has to do something really substantial and not kind of just, you know, maybe get to the quarterfinals in Europe or mid-table. He's got to kind of really make a statement, because beyond that, I think they'll want a figure that they now see as, you know, being capable to bring the club on. I mean, I suppose that's the modern game. Shakespeare's so respected by the players, loved by them, really, you know, and it's obviously done such a good job. But for the club itself and what they want someone that's got to keep their flag very prominent on the map.
Because most managers at the top clubs, let's face it, are vanity purchases.
Yeah.
You know, Mourinho and Man United, Pep and City. What about Arsene Wenger? Now we have to come to this every time we talk. I gather that your sense is that he's digging in for the long haul and you think he'll sign that two-year contract. Why?
Because ultimately he wants to stay. If you'd asked me about two or three weeks ago, I would have said, I think there's a really good chance that he'll go. And I still think that he might, because I think it would be wrong to say that basically something's set in stone, that he's got to decide by such and such, because believe you me, he's already decided he wants to stay. But he also knows that, I think, deep within, that if it goes completely into meltdown, they finish sixth or seventh, which is possible, and they go out in the semi-final, humiliated by Tottenham or Wembley or something. I mean, an absolute nightmare for Arsenal that would be. Is that basically, he knows, I think, that it would just be impossible, I think, to thrive and succeed again. It's almost like, people were telling me last week that I mean, I think that this is Chip Keswick's statement was a good thing to do because it took the focus off him a little bit. But I think the expectation is still there that basically he's got to re-energise himself and basically also show that even at 67 years of age, he's able to rebuild a squad, I think, with so many doubts and question marks over it. You'll probably lose Ozil in the summer, I fear. And then also almost certainly Sanchez. Say Chamberlain might go as well, and there's all sorts of doubts, you know, about floating around. And I think it's a huge, huge job of work. And I'm not sure that Wenger really could succeed in a really stale, difficult atmosphere. And again, I get the sense that the club are aware of this, and I still think the likelihood is that he'll stay. But I think there's a doubt there, both in his mind and the club's mind. And it will be, I think, a mutual decision. I think, as I say, I think the likelihood is 60-40 probably that he'll stay. But I get the sense that if it's really difficult, it's time to go.
Yeah, I get the sense that we've almost reached the point of no return on this. When you've got, you know, 75% of the fans against you, it's a running sore, isn't it?
Yeah. And also, even just to touch on what John said there, if Ozil and Sanchez do go, and at least one of them will, Does Wenger himself even have the kind of the resolve and energy at this point to kind of, given everything he's fighting right now, to actually, because he will have to rebuild the team given he's losing his two most influential players if they go. So if that happens, does he have it within him to kind of attract players to build up again, or would that be the point where he goes, well, you know, I suppose underneath all this is that ultimately Wenger's a man. I suppose, can he imagine his life without the day to day of football? And with the day-to-day of Arsenal, because even if he were to, say, go to PSG or whatever, that would be so...
It's logical that you go to PSG, but is it realistic?
I know that I was talking to a few people in Spain, and they were kind of... The vibe there was always he had his chance a decade ago, and now they look to younger younger man, particularly Barcelona. Barcelona are always quite counterintuitive about that sort of thing anyway. Like even the fact that this summer they'll probably go for Valverde, the Atletico Bilbao manager, rather than Sampaoli, who you would think is the obvious choice. PSG, though, I mean, they're still quite like in a similar way to City, they're quite a nascent European club as well. Like they don't have that legacy. They're just trying to figure things out. Although their defence of the coach after the defeat to Barca was interesting, and that they did seem quite strong behind, because the expectation that night was that he hasn't got long left. It could suit all parties for Wenger to go there next season. Get his tilt at the Champions League as well, because it's one of the most amazing things about his career as well, that he's never won a European trophy.
Mm. Let's look at the biggest game of the weekend is City and Liverpool.
Mm.
If we are right that we've got basically Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United going for that fourth place, where are Liverpool in that equation? They really struggled a bit against Burnley, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, but I thought getting that result would... I mean, you'd rather have points on the board, and that's the one thing. Even though they've played more games now, they've got those points on the board, and I think as the games stack up for... particularly, I think, for United, it's so important now, because I do feel that, as you say, I think it's almost become... Tottenham are slightly pushing themselves on, Man City as well, in Chelsea's slipstream. And I think it will come down to those other teams sort of pushing on. I wonder about Liverpool and their kind of... I think this is a big, big game for them, because I think Liverpool... I mean, their results since the turn of the year have been catastrophic, and yet they've lifted themselves to beat Arsenal and to beat Tottenham in good style, particularly the Tottenham game, really convincingly. And they had to win ugly against Burnley. But their record against the other top six teams in amongst them is amazing. Absolutely. It's what is it, 19 out of 27? And it's astonishing. And it's so impressive. And it could, again, that holds the key. And they seem to be able to. And Klopp will be wondering why his players can lift themselves for the big games and not the smaller ones, as is illustrated again, arguably, against Burnley almost, even though they got the result. And that will be his biggest frustration. But it's so tight at the moment in that mix-up that you basically couldn't afford to lose a game, see Arsenal or United win, and then make up ground, because it is so tight at the top and it would be desperate to avoid defeat. But their record against their direct rivals is fabulous.
Let's look at the top six, Migs. If all the top six were able to field their strongest team, now I know that's cloud cuckoo land to a degree, would Liverpool be the weakest of that top six?
In terms of the quality of the players, maybe actually, yeah. Because Spurs, I suppose, I often think kind of Spurs almost decide kind of getting the best, bang for their buck in that sense. Because I think it's not necessarily they're lacking quality, but it is a younger team, kind of a growing team, and he's kind of got them performing above themselves. But then they do have two kind of, like Kane is already, you would say, world class striker. Dele Alli's on the way there, and they do have a very strong defence. Whereas there's more kind of Liverpool all feels a bit more improvisational in that way. And also, who's probably Liverpool's standout star? Coutinho, maybe.
He's had a bit of a wobbly patch,
exactly.
Hasn't he?
You still wonder. I suppose you'd almost say that he has to kind of do more consistently to really even get to that kind of Kane level. So yeah, I think that they probably would be actually, yeah, because all the rest of the top six, it's a bit more depth, but they've also got a kind of proper top quality stars. Whereas Liverpool, I mean, if you're looking through the team, Wijnaldum has come on, to be fair, but they're quite front loaded in terms of their quality.
We mentioned Kane. How big a blow is it that it's looking that that's a bad injury, recurrence of that ankle injury? What does that do to Spurs and their season?
It's a massive blow, huge disappointment for them. I think the one bit of comfort they could take was obviously, I know it's Millwall, but basically the way that they actually played after he'd gone off. Basically, Son is such a good, adaptable player.
Three of those goals were fantastic.
Fabulous. And he's great, Son, in that basically, I think he can play across the front in those positions. Earlier in the season when Kane was out, and I know Tottenham struggled for goals, when he was missing for a period of time. He was really good up front and he played really, really well. And again, I think he can do that role, and I feel sure that they will turn to Son through the middle rather than sort of looking at Janssen trying to make that work, because not for me. I don't think that happens. But I wouldn't say that Spurs in any way can replace Kane. Absolutely not. Kane's brilliant. But in a way, they'll have to play in a different way. And with the movement, perhaps, of Eriksen prompting. Dele Alli, for a period of time, actually, sort of, they've been great form, Spurs, and their form has been even better when Dele Alli has almost played as the second striker. He's almost played as almost as auxiliary number nine alongside Kane. And he's been absolutely fabulous. So I think they've got options. I don't think their season will collapse, but Kane is so reliable for them that when they've been struggling to get goals or break teams down or break games down, Kane's always propped up, and that's when they'll miss him, when the going gets tight in the running.
Mm. I'm sure they're already printing up the T-shirts. You know, I was there when Vincent Janssen scored from open play. But it's obvious that Pochettino doesn't fancy him, or even Sissoko to a degree. When you've got that lack of managerial trust, what does that do to a player's head?
Well, this is it. I mean, I suppose it depends on the player, really, because some players maybe would just be motivated, I'm going to show him. And others just it'll downhearten them. It'll mean when they go on the pitch, they don't have to get a full belief themselves because they know, what am I doing here? I mean, I'm kind of on a hiding to nothing in that sense. To be honest, with the Sissoko thing, you can understand the signing because he still, there's that, you can see what he's capable of, and there's that power, and that power suits the way Spurs play. But what's so odd with Janssen now is that, other than maybe if he was one of those players to come on for 10 minutes, maybe he can kind of launch the ball to, he just doesn't seem to fit with what Spurs do because he slows down the play so much. I think that's why they'll really miss Kane in that sense, because I think sometimes with the way Pochettino plays, it's so, when they're at their best, it's so frenetic and so high energy that it's just a sense of kind of pinball around the box. Normally kind of just battering teams in submission, but they almost lack that little bit of precision. What Kane does then is that he offers different type of runs. I think that's why one reason he scores so many, because his runs are so hard to track, and because suddenly he just appears out of nowhere, slips the ball in, and you know all of Spurs' pounding of defence has that purpose and precision then. I think that's what they're missing. Obviously, Janssen doesn't give you anything like that.
Mm. Let's look at Manchester United, John. Do you expect them to go through in the Europa League against Rostov this week?
Yeah, I do. I think I like the way that Mourinho's taken it quite seriously. It's a real bugbear of mine that basic English clubs don't, generally, because I think it's a competition now not to be sneezed at. It's, a passport into the Champions League if you win it. And I felt, just looking at that first leg, that they would do it. And part of the issue that was perhaps the pitch. And I do think they'll go through. They've got the away goal, so I would expect them to do it. I think at the moment it is a balancing act for United because they've got Monday, Thursday, Sunday. And the more Mourinho talks about it and complains about it, the more it's in the players' heads. Mm. So he's got to find a difficult balance between kind of making an issue and trying to embarrass people, and they do deserve to be embarrassed, because why on earth is this game on the Monday night? It's obviously TV and I get that. Mm. I'm sorry, but we don't help our teams in the Europa League. It's a disgrace, basically, sometimes. They could have given them an extra 24 hours and reshuffled it. I understand TV schedules, but please don't make another TV documentary questioning why English clubs then don't do better in Europe, because you're part of the problem. And, it's a frustration of mine. And I do think that the Europa League, I think, has been given a nice new berth. You know where it is on a Thursday night, and I think it's quite exciting. I also think that if United can get through this, and I think they will, quarterfinals comes, and Jose Mourinho has been talking about this, you can suddenly see a passage. United, I think, will fancy themselves against anyone left in that competition once the quarterfinals come.
Yeah, you look at that, Olympic Lyon maybe, you know, they're 4-2 ahead against Roma, and speaking of which, Memphis Depay scores from sort of about 90 yards yesterday. He's absolutely playing at his top. Well, can United swallow their pride and maybe even invoke that buyback clause?
I mean, you'd wonder. What was so impressive about that strike as well was the power he got into it, given the kind of the short lift back he had as well. It was amazing. But I mean, I suppose I was thinking about it yesterday when I saw the goal. You do see that with some players, just for whatever reason, it just doesn't work out at a certain club. And they're almost kind of written off, but then just because they're in the right circumstances, and maybe also because of the challenge, because they haven't done it when they got that big move. I mean, another classic United case in that way is Diego Forlan, one of the most obvious. But, you know, it could be an interesting little sting to the season if United play Lyon with Memphis in that kind of form. But just even on that with Europa League, I think for all the debate about Mourinho and where he is as a manager now and how United should be doing, I think one of the things that is really still admirable about him is how much he values the kind of the flavour of winning a trophy and what that does for players, how it helps them kick on. I think that is to be respected.
Mm-hmm. But are some of his antics, you know, are we beyond now the sort of mind games that he's trying to play with Conte, you know, in the context of the FA Cup game, but also in the wider sense of, you know, look at me, I wasn't so bad at Chelsea, was I?
Yeah. Well, this, I mean, and it's interesting that Conte hasn't really wanted a bite at all. Although I do, I've heard a few murmurs that if Chelsea do win the title, he might have a little bit of a bite back. And on Friday, actually, when Mourinho's constant point about how, you know, suddenly counter-attacking football is fashionable, we asked Conte about it on Friday, and he didn't mention Mourinho by name, he didn't want to get into a war rant like that, but he did make a really impassioned defence. No, I never, ever, ever play counter-attacking football. And there is a little bit of that with some Mourinho's antics in that sense, and you kind of think, oh, we've heard this before now. Come on, give us something a bit new. This is because we all know the deal.
Yeah, with Mourinho, are you bored by him this season?
Oh, not really. I do think. Well, rightly says he is a winner. I know it's a dusted down the old cliche, but I love that his desire to win, and his, you know, sets it up straight from the EFL trophy and. I just think straight away, you know, trying to win the League Cup, I think setting it out that he wants to win the Europa League, I do think he's sort of almost giving him a bit of an excuse, himself an excuse about the FA Cup, which is unusual for him. But I do think I think earlier in the season I was a bit bored of him, really, and I thought he'd had his day. But I've got to say, I've been really impressed in the way that he's come back in the last couple of months. I know that sort of United's still stuck in sixth. It doesn't really, if you look at the table, it doesn't really make as if they've sort of kind of made that much progress. But I just think he's building again. And I think they're going to be quite a force next season. And I think he's just got his eyes on the prize, really. And I think if he foregoes the FA Cup to go and win the Europa League, gets in the Champions League and finishes it with a Champions League place, at the very least, whether that's top four, and then, you know, two trophies. What a season. What an amazing season. And that kind of perpetuates the whole special one myth again.
Mm. Will that be enough to keep Zlatan? You know, there's a lot of talk about LA Galaxy, $12 million contract. Oh, sorry, 12 million euro contract. Will he stay or will he go?
Well, interesting. I was talking to a Swedish journalist about that recently. He said one of the big things you have to consider with Zlatan, actually, is it's not just about his football career anymore. It's about his actually commercial career. And that's why coming to United was so big for him. Not just, obviously, he's done so well on a football sense.
Well, they made the same selling point to Pogba, didn't they?
Yeah, 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 exactly. And his brand and all his commercial interests have taken a bump out of that. So, obviously, the next step is America because, I mean, it's such a massive market in itself. So, I think there could be a lot on that. My gut would still be, I think, because he's got something to offer, and you can see it himself, he's got that personal pride. While he can still compete, I think he'd want to. Because I think, to be honest, I have to say, I was a little bit expecting this sort of season to be, 10 goals from Zlatan, maybe 4 against Hull or something like that. But he hasn't. He's been he's been so consistent, and I think United have really needed him because he's offered them that kind of almost physical mature assurance that they might have otherwise lacked.
Mm. What about Rooney? I can see him ending up in the States.
Yeah, I just feel that if Rooney goes to the States or to China, that's it for his England career. And we might be thinking that's it for his England career already. But I do feel that he thinks in his own mind that he's got something to offer. He's been so clear that he'll retire from England duty after the 2018 World Cup. I think he's got to make a massive decision. I don't know whether he could actually make it work at Everton. It would take some serious number crunching because players don't. yeah. But also, I think that, I don't know, players don't go for free. Don't go for the good of their health, basically. And he'll want a contract, a serious contract. But I think that Rooney, I don't think Rooney, no, under no circumstances, will be at United next season. But he's making that next career choice. There's no doubt about it in my mind that he had the opportunity to go to China before that window shut in February. Mm-hmm. He's clearly taken a look at it and thought, it's not for me. Well, what's that telling you? To me, it's saying to me that he wants to preserve his Premier League status, but much more importantly, his ability to go and beat Peter Shilton's England record. Yeah. I think that means the world to him.
What's your take on the way Ronald Koeman is rebuilding Everton? He's putting his own stamp on it very slowly. You know, you've got that youth project, if you like, yeah. Lookman coming in. Ross Barkley, he slaughtered him in his early days, but now he'd be really behind him, saying he's playing very well between the lines, you know, impressing further forward. What about Ross Barkley as a key England player? Does that add up to you?
Yeah, it's, I mean, he's got the talent, and all he has needed is that kind of application. I mean, in terms of Koeman in that sense, to be honest, even when he did well, as it happened last season, I was a little bit wary of kind of maybe praising him too much, because I think he has had a very patchy career. But I remember just before the Euro, I was talking to Shane Long when he was on Ireland duty, and he was talking about just how much, what really stood out with Koeman was just how much he worked on his individual game with him, and just the, kind of that insight from being an ex-player, particularly going one of the top centre-halves. I think that's what he's very good at with young players, that he can give them that weight of experience, that weight of insight. I think it's worked in a number of ways with Barkley in that sense. And I suppose the biggest thing he's done with Everton, even beyond improving players like that, is giving them that defensive stability that was not exactly there last season.
Mm. With England, you know, the squad's named on Thursday. Mm. It's going to be a difficult squad for him to name. You've got fixtures right up until 72 hours before they play Germany. Will we see a big squad and maybe with some new names in?
Yeah, I think we'll see a few experiments. I think we'll also see a squad that's named and then absolutely depleted after Sunday. It's so bad, the timing, because basically you've got the Super Sunday, you've kind of got great fixtures, and that's what we want to see at this stage of the season, isn't it? Let's not kid ourselves. You want to kind of see the big games, and it's incredibly exciting. And at the moment, it feels like England in Germany is almost a bit of an afterthought. Unfortunately, if he calls up and he's naming it on Thursday, as you say, he calls him up, I think you'll see a lot of withdrawals and kind of losing some already. I mean, you're seeing two members of the spine of that team gone, and basically Harry Kane and Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson's already been ruled out. So where do you get... I mean, I don't know what actual benefit that Gareth Southgate will get from that Germany game. And that's why I think you'll suddenly see kind of a few call-ups. I'd like to see kind of, you know, Michael Keane get another opportunity.
Nathan
Redmond, absolutely. I think he's played really, really well. And he's an interesting player because he's not just a winger. He can sort of come inside. He can sort of tuck in. He could be wide of the front three, if you like, playing in that role. And I just feel that you'll see such an experimental team, not just the squad, in Germany. Whether that's a good thing or not, because basically, just to break it down, you get one training session on the Monday. None of the players from the big teams then playing on Sunday will be involved. They'll just do a warm down. They'll report up. The only full training session ahead of Germany you'll get is on the Tuesday. And then also, you've got a huge World Cup qualifier, whether we like it or not, which has to be bigger in Southgate's mind on the Sunday at Wembley. So he's got to prioritise. That's why I think it's going to be all over the shop this England week.
So we don't give our international footballers a chance.
Well, this is, and you do wonder maybe if there should be a rearrangement of the calendar that way. Like, why not make the club season two weeks shorter, so there's no international interruptions between, you know, coming? Because, as you said, I mean, it's just... Just when the season's building up, just in the Champions League, kind of, there's been these storylines to it. You get a sense for the title races, and then suddenly away to not even qualifiers, but you know, some friendlies that kind of that probably not even the players want too much. And you do wonder maybe they could have shortened the season club wise, or maybe basically use this to take 2 weeks off the end, then give more time for internationals, and that creates maybe more of an event about internationals in the summer as well. It is odd timing in that sense. It's kind of just underwhelming. You're just kind of feeling that we're going from all this excitement to then something that, hang on, why do we care about this at this point again?
Mm. International breaks are usually the graveyard of football managers. Now, you know, if you look at what's going on in the Championship, three managers gone in four days, that's carnage. Will panic set in? Middlesbrough, for instance. You know, they're playing Man United at the weekend. Karanka hasn't been impressive. His team can't score for love nor money. Are we going to get a panic button press there?
Well, I think history tells us that the one thing that Steve Gibson at Middlesbrough doesn't do is panic. And I think there was a lot of kind of rumours and whispers a couple of weeks ago, wasn't there, that I think if Middlesbrough lost, then he'd be done for, and he hasn't been, which I think I kind of respect that view. But where it worries me is not just about where Middlesbrough's next result is going to come from, it's where their next goal is going to come from. Cranker is a very strong, authoritative figure. I think he's now got to be questioned as to whether he can kind of get those players galvanised and working together again to kind of get any upsurge in form. A couple of weeks ago, I thought Bournemouth were on the slide and were probably going to fall into it. And yet, actually, now suddenly they've salvaged themselves with a really morale-boosting draw at Man United and then a win over West Ham. It shows you that it can turn around so quickly. That's why I tend to think that, actually, massive credit to Gibson, he will stick with Karanka for the short term at least. I don't know quite much how much longer he's got, because make no mistake about it, he is on thin ice. But I just think the reason that he's stuck with him so far is he's incredibly loyal and he's seen other results and other teams turn it around very quickly.
There's been a lot of chuntering about Slaven Bilic after that defeat at Bournemouth. I tend to think that's quite unfair, but something's going on at West Ham, isn't there?
Yeah, and I suppose they're still kind of... Well, it's been such a strange season in general, because if you remember, in October, November, they seem like the crisis club. I think Bilic has done well to stabilise it through that, especially since... especially throughout the whole Dimitri Payet thing. But the one where I remember talking to someone close to City again, when they battered West Ham twice and kind of in a short space of time, I said they generally found them the easiest side, and not just because of the score, obviously, but in terms of how they were able to kind of move through them, they found West Ham the easiest side to play against. And it is odd like that, because last season was still one of the most impressive things about West Ham Village was how many results he took off the top sides, how well they could have reacted to top sides. But then you'd see them against someone, like I remember being on one of the worst games that last season, which is Sunderland West Ham in January. I think it was just when Allardyce was kind of starting to impose himself on Sunderland, and it was an awful game. And West Ham just couldn't seem to get going at all. And they do seem a side almost like with a little bit of lacking a bit of a football identity in that sense.
Bournemouth got Swansea this weekend. Now, two things here. Paul Clement has turned that club around in terms of just, he's almost recreate the culture overnight there. But secondly, let's look at also Bournemouth. There's a lot of resentment about the punishment that Tyrone Mings has had from that contretemps at Old Trafford. Is that a potential rallying point for them as well? Because they do feel hard done by.
They do, and mixed views on this. I actually think that I think the FA had to take a stand on it. And I know people say, well, how come about Zlatan's elbow as compared to the five games? But it's all about kind of, it's the act itself rather than the intent. But I do think that sometimes that kind of rallying together and bringing together can have a massive effect. I think it's been a really testing season for Eddie Howe, who sort of kind of sat on the throne as the
new boy king.
Absolutely. And you know, he's supposed to be a next England boss, supposed to be next Arsenal boss. And this season has just checked it, basically. And I always think the second season is so much harder. And that's what it is, effectively, in Premier League terms, for Eddie Howe. And I think to kind of steady the ship, and if you can use that to kind of galvanise, Mings, let's be honest, isn't one of his absolute mainstays and wouldn't be the first go-to.
Josh King's done fantastically well recently, hasn't he?
Yeah, completely, yeah. It's what he gives them that little bit more kind of bite about them. I think that was, talking about teams that are easy to play against, I think that's what Bournemouth have become for about 2 months there, that they're just kind of just, in trying to do what they do, they were just, it was all just a bit soft. Whereas now they do have that buyback, and King's been key to that.
And what about Wilshere, Jack Wilshere, player you know well, John? How do you see his future mapping out?
I don't think he'll be at Bournemouth, and I think he's coming out now, 15 months left. I'm not sure that. I think people see that he's been playing, and kind of think, oh, he's back to his best. I've seen him have some good games, and I've seen him have some pretty, you know, average, disappointing games, really. It'll be interesting to see where Arsenal go from here. And I think something of that will depend on Cazorla and where Cazorla is in terms of recuperation and rehabilitation. I know that we're slightly worried about him being fit for the start of next season, so that's a slight issue. And you need someone like Wilshere to set the tempo, but I don't know whether Wilshere has done enough in that period of time to make people think that kind of he's wouldn't say worth the gamble, but if he were a free agent this summer, then the club, big clubs, would be queuing up around the block to sign him. There's no doubt about it. But because he's obviously still got 12 months left, Arsenal wouldn't let him go for buttons, and they might actually still think he's part of their plans. They'd want a big fee. And it's, for me, you cannot pay a big fee on what we are still looking at, which is potential. There's so much talent there, but that kind of the whole long-running injury and the doubt will make people think twice. And Pep loves him.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to say, could he do a job for City?
The one thing, maybe Jack Wilshere 2-3 years ago, but the one thing, does he have the kind of, is he still able to kind of pass at the same pace, or kind of more so kind of in the way that kind of City teams require, Pep teams require, to kind of get that quick evasion of the defender and then keep the play moving? Because the one thing I noticed with Wilshere repeatedly over the last 2 or 3 seasons at Arsenal is that when he suddenly go past a player, he used to always have that burst about him. But the amount of times he was kind of going down now, either kind of, you know, a little bit of kind of buying the foul, or else just because he couldn't get away from defenders properly. I think he has maybe lost that little bit of zip, but I'm not sure he's kind of still at that level he would be for City.
So, speaking of City, let's end where we started in the Champions League. It's a simple question. How many English clubs in the last 8? None, 1, or 2?
I'm going to go super optimistic and I'm going to go 2.
Next?
I'll say 1. I waver on Leicester a lot because I think tomorrow's going to be a proper event. Sevilla, well, I think Sevilla might just have too much about them. I think City will get through though.
I'm with Miguel. City, yes. Leicester, no. The Premier League is great entertainment, but let's be honest, it doesn't have a great team. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.